Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
Harry, can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
Can you say Josh?
Josh.
Widdicombe?
That's a program.
Widdicombe?
Program.
Well done.
There
nice.
We go.
You're that the problem, Harry. Aren't you? The Widdicombe's the problem for a lot of these kids.
Oh, it's been a fucking bane of my life, mate. From the moment I started as the last on the register up until Anne Widdicombe becoming famous... And now
God,
the children can't read the
run.
Name.
Yeah. You've had a terrible run with Widdicombe. Anne Widdicombe. And she must have been peaking when you was at school.
Yeah, I reckon she was probably when I was a teenager, wasn't she, Anne Widdicombe?
Or, yeah, that's the last thing. Because I remember when, like, I first met you and I immediately thought of Anne Widdicombe. And then obviously she spells her name different to you.
She spells it differently.
There's a little E in the middle.
I've told you she moved into the village I grew up in after I left. Yeah, and called her house Widdicombe's Retreat or something. My parents are fucking livid.
You've got to buy it.
Yeah, maybe I will. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm loving life. I'm enjoying our interviews with people. We're doing more of them.
Yeah, it's
going,
nice
we've
to
got
be
a good
back
one
to them,
today.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Also, we've got a bit of a backlog of correspondence, so should we do some before our...
Yeah, and then we were thinking guests. Next week doing a load of correspondence, because there's so much good stuff.
Let's catch up on correspondence, because we've not done it, because we've been blabbering on about our kids over the summer holidays, because we've been with them all the time. I find, though, when they're off so much, I can't think of what to tell you on here, because it's constant and it's overwhelming, where actually, when you pick them up from school or whatever, the time you're with them, it sits in your head more. But I'm tired, Josh.
It's
I'm tired
all right, today. Rob. It's all right. Do you want me to read out some correspondence?
If you don't mind, do you mind reading down some correspondence?
You put your feet up.
I've highlighted some in green
that you like.
The good ones, some good ones to do first.
Okay.
If you want to do them, or you can just freestyle it.
Yeah, that's fine. Things you were called into school for.
Oh, okay.
Hi, we're Josh and Rob. When I was at primary school, I'm now 47, my mum got a visit from the head dinner lady. Got a visit from the dinner lady? That's
the
a weird...
head dinner lady? I didn't know there was a hierarchy.
No. She was concerned as she's received a gift from me for Christmas, and when I'm wrapping it, realised it was a solid silver dish. Upon questioning, I revealed that every year I'd wrap things up from around the home and give them to my dinner ladies, as they used to save me extra custard.
Extra custard.
That is so lame.
That's so sad.
The dinner ladies are taking bungs.
What did you... Did you have school dinners?
We had packed at primary, and then at secondary I had school dinners, but... There were so many kids at my secondary school, you didn't have a one-on-one relationship with the dinner ladies. You just, like, come through. They'd call you my lover, and then, like...
My lover? Did they call you my lover?
They would, yeah. They were proper, like, Devon... Right through, please, my lover! Right through, please, being, like...
More custard, my lover! I think I could do a better Devon accent than you.
Yeah, well, I can't do it. I can't do accents. What? I can't do any accents.
Yeah, but that's your accent.
It's not my accent,
is
it?
What is your accent?
I don't know, just kind of annoying nasal twang, isn't it? I don't know what my... I don't think it's regionalised.
Try and do your best Devon.
Right through, please, my lover!
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, but that's all I can say, because that's what the dinner ladies used to say.
Like Jeffro, is that Jeffro who was around that
He's
way?
He's Cornwall, yeah, but I mean, potato, potato, isn't it? It's
do
the same
you get,
fucking thing.
Do you get mizzle in Devon? Or is that just
What's
Cornwall?
What's that?
It's mist and rain. They called it, because I was listening to Pirate FM doing a gig down there, and they said, oh, lots of mizzle coming in. I was like, what? Drizzle? And it was mizzle, and I Googled it, and it's like a term that they use for the weather down there, where it's wet mist, but it's quite a heavy wet mist.
Yeah, I like the mizzle. It makes me feel like that's nice mizzle. I enjoy that. Even like thinking about that now, it's relaxed me.
What, mizzle? Misty drizzle? Yeah, it's commonly used in Devon and Cornwall to describe a mixture of fine drizzle and thick, saturated mist or fog. Although mizzle might seem like a clever portmanteau...
Words combined.
Right, okay. Combining mist and drizzle, it likely derives from the Low German mizlin, or Dutch word for drizzle, mazlin.
Oh, come on, it means mist and drizzle. We all know it means mist and drizzle. Fucking get over yourself, book smart.
I thought Moorish was a place down in Devon, not something you wanted more of.
What, you thought there was a place called Moorish?
Well, like, there's moors, isn't it? So it's like, more, you know, like Cornish or Moorish. So like the moors, that it's like something from that they make it down there. It's Moorish the same way as it's like, you know, Yorkshire pudding.
It's Moorish.
This is Moorish.
How much have you been to the Southwest? You talk about it, Rob, like I've come from fucking Middle Earth. It's 3 hours away.
I used to keep thinking, bloody hell, they're making some good...
We don't live in America. Like, the whole island is drivable in one day.
No, but I used to think, bloody hell, they're making some good food in Moorish. Everyone keeps eating it. They can't get enough of this stuff. I've got to get down there and eat. It's unbelievable. Though I find it quite a fascinating place, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the third world. Like, it is more...
No, it's just... it is slower.
Yeah.
And it's quite like everyone... And it's lovely. You can see why it's slow, because it's beautiful and it's chilled and you got your job and you do it. But, you know, whenever you go up north and stuff, you're always near a big city, but... City? Near a big city, like my lover. But when you go down there, it just sort of slowly get... There's not another big city. It's just the end. You know what I mean? It just gets slower. Like, if you're driving up north or whatever, you leave London and then it goes, and a bit like Hertfordshire's a bit more chilled, and Cambridge, and then all of a sudden you're in Birmingham.
Then you
leave Birmingham and it goes all like countryside, and then it's like Manchester or Sheffield or Leeds, and then there's always somewhere else. But I just find it just sort of...
It just tapers off.
It sort of like peters out, doesn't it? Is that fair?
Is that your description of Cornwall? Britain petering out.
It basically gets petered out and you're forced to eat something that Rick Stein's made. It's so narrow. It's so narrow down there.
You're not going to fall off, Rob. It's still white. It's not a balance beam. It's not a tightrope.
I feel like Cornwall's a bit like, you know, that Willy Wonka when he goes into that room and it gets littler and littler?
Yeah.
As he walks back, that's how I feel about it. But anyway, my lover, have you got another email?
Add to the end of that email, unbeknownst to me, I'd wrapped nearly £50 worth of silver and gifted it in return for custard. That's from Sally.
Depends on the custard, though, doesn't it? So I'm a cheap custard guy. I'd rather have cheap custard than the, you know, like Marks and Spencer's do, like, the best custard ever or whatever. I just quite like Ambrosia.
I like Ambrosia, but I'd loathe to describe it as the cheap custard, Rob. I love the Ambrosia range,
Devon.
Yeah, Devon knows how they make it so creamy.
Devon knows that. I forgot about that.
Cream.
Do you know what I love? When I love gigging is when you gig somewhere where there's a brand that's really, really famous in that area. Yeah. And I'll go, where do you work? He's like, I'm a baker. And I go, where do you work? And he's like, at the factory. I'm like, what factory? He's like, Warburton's, mate. And the whole crowd laugh. Because how does this London guy not know that Warburton's around here? Fucking wake up. Wake up, mate. Where have you been all your life? It's bloody Warburton's around here, yeah? Now, you get that in Workington, because a lot of people work in Sellafield, the nuclear power plant.
It's Weetabix and Kettering.
Well, yeah, Weetabix and Kettering. So
Milton Keynes and Amazon. I've come a cropper with all of them, Rob.
Where's the one in, I think it was Middlesbrough has got a big bait, maybe Warburton's or something, I can't remember. But Sellafield is near Workington. So I said to bloke, where do you work? He went, the fan room.
Yeah.
I went, oh, is that a shop in town? He went, no, the fan room of the... So they don't tell you that they work... It's a given. So they tell you what department.
Yeah. Have you done Barrow in Furnace?
Yes,
everyone
I have.
Everyone works in submarines.
Yes.
I'm going to say it, Rob.
Go on.
We have again failed to get through enough correspondence.
Right, we're going to do proper correspondence on Tuesday.
Unbelievable behaviour from us. One email about a dinner lady
We didn't even finish. We interrupted.
We interrupted. Absolutely. You must show more discipline than this on Radio 2, Rob, surely. Is it me that's the problem?
I do need a bit of structure. I will, as you heard in the last episode, talk about, you know, noshing people off in prison.
Yeah.
Which is not, it's not something you can do on Radio 2, but it's normally something that happens when you leave Radio 2.
Oh, that is good gear. That's the kind of humour we're looking for.
Oh, that was packaged nice.
Right. Are we ready for this guest?
Right, this guest, Josh, who we got?
This was a great interview. She's just had a child. She's a brilliant comedian who's supporting Alan Carr on tour at the moment. She's also got a dog, so there's a lot of dog chat for Rob, who's still dealing with his dog situation.
I'm getting into my dog, actually. I might talk about that on Tuesday. We're bonding.
Oh, that's good. This is Kelly Convey.
Kelly Convey, welcome to the show. We've been trying to have you on for ages, but... our diaries didn't work.
Our diaries are rubbish, Rob. Our diaries are appalling.
I'm the busiest, so...
Exactly. You've got the baby.
How old's your baby, Kelly?
She's 10 months.
Oh, fucking hell. Sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, she's just on the move now, so it's getting...
Oh, really?
She's getting real, yeah.
Yeah, it's when they start moving. So is she walking or crawling? What's she up to?
She's sort of like furniture walking, crawling... Like, you can't take your eyes off her for 2 seconds. You know, you take it for granted. Like, you pop out to the kitchen and make yourself a drink or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, here's Johnny. over like a ledge that's just, I'm living at my dad's at the moment because my house is being sorted out and everything is a stone floor. It's just, it's stone fireplaces, ledges everywhere to fall down. It's just a death trap everywhere, so I can't take my eyes off. And I've got a dog as well.
Yeah, you've got a big, like, British bulldog thing, you know, the Churchill dog.
38 kilos, he is.
38 kilos?
38 kilos.
That's heavier than Josh.
Yeah, well, you know, he needs to get on the Huel, Rob.
I just keep shitting himself every time he has a curry. Right, so, Kelly, you're at your dad's house and you've just got married. You've got a 10-month-old baby and a massive bulldog.
Yeah, mate, yeah, it couldn't get any harder, really. Do you know what? I like to just pile on the stress. I like to just add it on and on and on. If I can really just get really stressed, it's really, really good.
Is your dad much help?
My dad's actually a diamond, yeah. He's really good with her and he does take her and that, but he's always working. So, like, it's like today with the podcast, I've just put her downstairs in a high chair with loads of rice cakes.
The whole thing?
Is he with her?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course he is.
I genuinely fell for that.
And what about your new husband? Where is he working in the office or from home? Or what's he up to?
Yeah, he works in the office. So he's out and about during the day. And then he swans in at night and gets all the easy stuff. No, he's very good, actually. He's quite hands-on. Like, we've just been on our honeymoon and he pretty much just took her the whole time and just let me lie down.
Oh,
which
my God.
Which was really nice.
A 10-month-old on a honeymoon.
Rob, would you have done that on holiday? 10-month-old, say I'll take it the whole time?
Yeah, no, I don't mind doing that. It's more just taking a 10-month-old on a honeymoon. But were you supposed to get married before COVID? Is this what's happened?
Yeah, the baby's actually wedding number 2. I mean, we were meant to get married 3 different times across COVID. So, she wasn't actually meant to be there when we first got married.
Right, but okay.
Yeah, wedding number 2 got cancelled. I thought, well, there's no stress in my life. What should I do? All right, I can't organise a wedding. I might as well just pop a kid out. So that was wedding number 2. So
and are you back full time gigging now, Kelly?
I went back to gigging when she was 3 months old.
Whoa!
Yeah.
How was that?
It was all right. It wasn't too bad. I mean, I have to say, she's quite a good girl. Like, she took to the bottle quite. Like, I was still breastfeeding, but I was pumping and she'd take a bottle in the evening. You know, I'd give her, I'd have an express bottle and Bruce would take her my other half and I'd go off to my gig and come back. And if they were like far away ones, he'd just take the time off work and we'd all go. Him, the baby, the dog, everything.
Amazing. How are the venues when you turned up with a baby and a £57 bulldog or whatever it was?
38 kilo bulldog.
38 kilo, sorry. Rob, Brexit's Brexit. I'm calling it £57, mate.
Yeah.
Taking back control there, Josh.
Yeah, I am, mate.
He's taking back the control of your dog's weight, Kelly, because that's what the European Union stopped Josh Whittaker doing.
I voted Leave so that I could choose dog weights how I wanted. Thank you very much.
That's five cats for me in old money. That dog weighs as much as five cats. But genuinely, did you actually take... were these club gigs or these... You do tour support for Alan Carr, don't you? So would you turn up on Alan Carr's tour with a dog, a husband and a kid?
Yeah, basically. I get on so well with Alan that it was okay. But yeah, no, it was basically... The tour, everything was meant to happen before COVID. So, yeah. Like, I had this, like, amazing opportunity where I'd done all of these work in progress shows. And then I had this opportunity to do all the big shows, like the big, like, so work in progress, you do, as you guys know, but like in the really small theatres, a couple hundred people. Then you go to the big tour, which is like thousands of people. So I was just like pumped for this tour. And then it just kept being pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And then eventually the start date of the tour was my due date. And I was like, got to be kidding. I was like, Alan, do you reckon you want to push it back? You know. So that's really the reason I went back so early, because I just was like, I ain't missing out on this, you know, this is an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, so we just made it work, you know, so it's not been easy. Like, there's been times when, you know, cause especially with the bloody dog, I mean, I love him to death, but it does add another dimension to it. So when you're going up there, like, where was it? It was Scunthorpe. We went up there and we had a hotel booked. But it wasn't dog friendly, so we had to book the only dog friendly hotel in Scunthorpe. It was rank. So what they'd said on the website is that they had baby cots.
That's a gamble.
Oh my God, I've never seen anything like it. It was like a horror show. It was all broken, so it wasn't even sturdy, and it had—I don't even know what to describe it. It had like a life form growing out of the mattress.
Oh, what do you mean?
Like it was just hard, crusty food stains. I don't know what was living in there. Took her in the bed with me. I laid awake all night with her because I was just so, it was just so rank. I didn't even want to shower in it. You know when it's that rank, you don't even want to shower.
You come out dirtier.
Yeah, mate. So, it's not been easy, but we just got to make it work. Like, it's in some ways, being a stand-up, it's easy because Bruce works in the day, I go out at night, so we've got that, like, balance.
What does Bruce do? I've never met a Bruce. Well, I've met your Bruce. I met him once.
I've never met
a
Bruce.
No, but like a Bruce. I just, every time that you say Bruce, it makes me smile. Did it take a little while to get used to his name, Kelly?
I didn't believe him at first. I said, what's your name? He said, it's Bruce. It's no, don't lie.
Where's he from?
He's from Brighton. He's from down the coast.
So he's not even Australian?
No, mate. No, he's not. He's just got a funky mum.
Funky mum?
Bruce, love it.
Yeah. She's just called him Bruce. She just decided on Bruce. So.
But also, he's a massive sort of rugby playing type guy. And I swear, when I met him, I might have imagined it. He had a moustache.
He did, yeah. He rocks a moustache, mate. He rocks it.
I'm going to go back to my old question. You sure he's not Australian?
I mean, he's been down under, but we won't go there.
Yeah. How much does he weigh? No, I'm joking. And what does Bruce do then? So he's what? Is he sort of office like worker in the day kind of job?
He's an electrical engineer. So he does like, if you have a power cut, he's sort of, he works for the company that gets you back on. So,
okay.
God, so he's constantly introducing himself to people and they're going, yeah, but what's your real name? Like,
legit. Like, every time we go somewhere, they're like, oh, yeah, good one. Like, he's like, why would I make that up? Like, what am I getting out of this situation?
Rob, we don't do enough about partners' names. We've never really chased this down and it's a rich area.
We've never had a Bruce at our fingertips before, Josh.
We need to be asking this every interview. What's your partner's name? Is it weird?
What's your partner's name and how much do they weigh? That's all we want to know. What's your dog called, Kelly?
Nelson.
Bruce Nelson. Oh, my God, it sounds like an EDL rally. So you've got the dog. So how long are you at your dad's for?
We've been here for bloody months. The work should be finished. Oh, it's driving me mad now. I mean, I love living with my dad. It's not a problem, but it's in the middle of nowhere and I just feel like a complete recluse. It's just like,
Where are you then?
Out in Surrey.
Right, okay.
there's like nothing walking distance anywhere. You have to get in the car. And like, I'm used to being in London where there's like, you know, a shop at the end of the road at least, you know. So
and with a 10-month-old, that must feel really kind of entrapped.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like all the baby classes and that, what I decided to do was join them all over at home in Southeast London. So I thought I wanted to get in with all the mums over there. And I thought, oh, it'd be fine driving over 2-3 times a week. Oh, my God. An hour there, an hour back.
Oh, my God.
And then you get to the class and I thought, and you'd at the end of the class and none of the mums would be like, do you want to go for a coffee? So I'm like, sweet.
Oh, mate.
Oh, no.
Straight back in the car.
Yeah, it's kind of weird trying to make friends with mums because it's sort of like a lot of the where I am in Southeast London, it's like East Dulwich sort of way, and yeah, a lot of them are proper posh, like rich wives. So, so one of the classes when she was tiny was the baby massage.
Yeah,
and so we got there, sat around, and it went around the room, and everyone was saying, you know, I'm Kelly, whatever. And I said, sorry, can I just check that the babies will be massaging us, right? Laugh, like, break the ice. Fucking tumbleweed. Like,
just pick up the baby and leave at that point. Just walk out.
There was one woman, though, that did laugh at the table, and we've been friends since, actually. She was like, oh, my God, they're so stuck up. So, you know, it did pay off because I have made friends out of it. It's quite tricky, yeah.
It's a good way to whittle them down, isn't it?
No wonder you went back gigging. You were desperate.
I needed the reassurance that I hadn't lost it, man.
Are you breastfeeding as well, Kelly?
Yeah, and well, I have stopped now. I'm on the formula now, which there's a bit of guilt there. It's weird with the breastfeeding because everyone's like bang on the breastfeeding. Do you know what I mean? Like they're all like, you've got to breastfeed your child. You've got to breastfeed your child. And the best breast is best. And like I was so obsessed with this. And like, you know, as soon as she was born, because they say as soon as like the baby's born, you've got to get them like, you know, straight on your boob. Like, and I went through like quite a long labor, like she was 2 weeks late and I had to be induced twice and I was in labor for 38 hours.
Oh my God.
Oh my word. So talk me through the 38 hours, not minute by minute, but like give me a brief breakdown of how these 38 hours played out.
Well, I went so they had to induce me like twice, so like finally like things started happening, but it was so slow that we went for a roast.
We did that. We went for breakfast because we were induced, and then they just send you out into the kind of...
We were induced, all right, Josh.
I know, mate.
At what point did a midwife put her fingers up your ass?
Oh, about 6 hours in, actually, Rob. It was quite a... we were all quite bored. So you went for a roast, and were you feeling anything at this point?
Yeah, no, the contraction, I was miserable, mate, because I was overdue, and I was taking my due date as like, you know, that was it. And, you know, 2 weeks passed by and I was absolutely miserable. And, it, you know, like, lovely old lady on my road, Elaine, she'd come out and be all like, have you tried a curry? I was like, you tried shutting up, Elaine? And enough of your chat, mate. I don't want to try a curry. I don't want a long walk. I want the baby to come out. But, yeah, so I was miserable and I was just like, I was definitely feeling it. Then we got to the roast, I had a roast and the contractions started. And when it's your first time, like you just think, oh, this is the peak of the pain. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, like it's happening. Yeah. I'm in labor. Let's go back to the hospital. Okay, I'll have dessert first, but then let's go back. And we got back to the hospital and she was all like, oh no, like you are nowhere near. And I was like, what do you mean nowhere near? And then I realised hours later that pain was nothing, like nothing. The contractions like kicked in. And then like, I was like on the gas and air. I didn't have anything other than gas and air. I was just bang on that gas and air. I was flying, mate. I was absolutely flying. I went through two massive canisters, like canisters like that are as tall as me. Yeah. Went through two of them and then they had to put me up to the mains because I was going through the canisters so quickly. I was off my nut. And then finally it was like that I was just ready. Suddenly it was just go time. I mean, suddenly, 38 hours later, yeah. But it just all happened in one moment where it was like, okay, we're going, we're going, we're going. So as soon as she came out, my instant thing was that I had to get her on my boob and have this bonding moment, this skin to skin, but also yeah. breastfeeding to establish it. So I didn't even look at her. I just got her straight on my boob. And this moment where you look down at your baby for the first time and she had latched onto my breast and I realised she was the spitting image of my dad. No, it was horrifying. Like, literally, my little dad's face.
Really? Oh, really? That was your first thought?
And you couldn't unsee it. Like, literally. Like, for the first 2 weeks of her life, it was like someone had superimposed my dad's face on her. So that was my first experience of breastfeeding. And then we got so excited, you know, that first moment when they're born and you want to send the photo to all the family. So we like sent the photo to the family, and then my dad, bless him, he was so excited, he sent it on to all of his mates. And then, you know, like bloke, they're proper blokey geezers. And he come, one of his mates, John, come back and said, "Yeah, John, boy, I have to say to you, mate, your daughter's breasts are out in that photo." And what I didn't realise is that I'd sent a photo, but all of my, you're looking at the baby, aren't you? You're looking at the baby. I didn't realise that all of my boobs were out in it, like all of my big, massive burger nips. They go really big. He'd sent it to all of his mates. All of his mates had seen my neck. But someone in my NCT group had a worse one. The husband had sent the photo out to all of the family groups and everything like that of the baby in the little warmer box thing.
Mm.
What he didn't realise is in the background of the photo is the wife getting stitched up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
How'd you ever get out of that doghouse? There's nothing you can do that won't get thrown back in your face. Well, at least I didn't send a photo of you getting stitched up around.
Oh, man alive.
And I was going to talk about your dad as well, because like you've got quite an interesting upbringing, really. Because is your dad a traveller?
No, my extended family, my auntie is my dad's brother's wife as traveller.
Right, yeah. So you have some travellers in your family and stuff. But then didn't your dad, when you were growing up younger, you didn't have as much money, but then he did really well in business and then had a couple more kids. He sort of had a very different upbringing to you. Is that right?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, my dad made like a ton of money when we had left school
right.
and left home, essentially. So we didn't reap any of the rewards of this. she says now living in his sort of cottage on the ground. So, I mean, I have to, you know, but basically what happened was is that my dad sold a company for lots and lots of money. And then that was when my baby brother and sister were, you know, really young. So they went to the finest private schools and have grown up in pure, like, privilege and wealth. So, Marley Posh. And, Harry just completed his master's at Cambridge in science. Like, what?
What was you doing at his age, Kelly?
Oh, I don't know, probably stoned somewhere.
And so, like, do you think with your, you know, because your daughter will have a different sort of upbringing to you, but then also quite similar, I imagine, to your brothers and sisters and stuff. Do you see the sort of stark differences between it?
Oh, mate, like, you know what? The private education is just, like, crazy. I mean, it's not like I wish I had had a private education, but, mate, like, I remember my little brother telling me, like, I used to read him bedtime stories, and he'd ask me to stop because my grammar was so bad. Correcting me, like, you know, it's a different world. It's sort of like, you know, you do see the other side of it. I mean, Harry was just, like, so impressive. I mean, Rosie is as well, but, you know, like, it was only a couple of weeks ago that he graduated from Cambridge, and I was just like standing there, and we went to the little ceremony and that, and you're seeing all of these kids like walking through in their little caps and, you know, pure geeks, like proper geeks. And they're just, it's just like a different world, you know, like they're just so successful already, you know, yeah. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if one day my brother was potentially Prime Minister. He's called Harry, but my dad can't pronounce his H's, so it'd be like, Harry, you know. He's like, yes, father. Yeah, so it's a weird, we've got this like literal class divide down our down the center of our family, but it doesn't, you know, we get on so well. And you know, if I can give B that sort of education, then great. But I don't, you know, it's not going to keep me up at night. Although one of my mum friends showed me a video for a local private school, and I almost cried for the kindergarten. Oh my god! So she said, watch this and try not to cry. Oh my god, it's beautiful. The education, the facilities. Oh my god!
You'd go there for the afternoon just to brush up on a few things.
I'd bloody love to if I could afford it. Jesus.
Do you wind him up? Because it's normally like the parents goes, well, you're lucky you're getting this because I had this when I was your age. But you're so much closer to it because you know what holidays you had compared to what holidays they had. Does that ever come up? Do you ever sort of like, do you ever say to your dad, like, all that money you spent on their education, can I have that in a lump sum?
Yeah, can I just, you owe me about 10 grand a term here, mate. Over 11 years, I'll take it now. Imagine if you offered that to your kid at the start. Do you want the private education or do you want the money in the bank? That would be an exciting moment for the kid.
I mean, yeah, if they're 4 years old and take the money, I think they don't need the private education. Yeah, no, it only come up the other day when we're sitting there and Harry's like finished his uni and that. And he's like, I don't know what to do. You know, and he was like, he's got a friend out in Australia. And literally just without even thinking, my stepmom was like, well, we'll just pay for you to go to Australia. Just go to Australia. I was like, I'm going to go to Australia.
I want to go.
Who wants to go back to Australia?
You hate it. Loads of 21-year-old Cambridge graduates going, "Raw, where's my backy?" doing TikToks. You'd be livid after an hour. Yeah. And how's Nelson, your massive dog, getting on with the baby? Because that's something that like people talk about. If you've got a little baby and then a big, heavy dog like that, even if the dog's lovely, it's just big and heavy.
It's hard. It does add another dimension to it. You know, she can't be on the floor. Like now she's a bit more sturdy and that, like at first, you know, it was really tricky because you've got a, like with a baby, like with, you know, a lot of time they'll be playing on the floor, let them do the tummy time or whatever. And you just can't do that. So a lot of it was up high and he wasn't used to it because he's never had a baby in the house and he's 9 and, you know, he's always been the baby. And
yeah.
The high pitched screaming and all that stuff. It was quite tough. And I think he was a bit, I don't know about jealous, but I just didn't like it. He didn't like the sounds and that. And I think he'd look, you know, he'd be, well, he was a bit jealous. Probably, you know, when he was...
How does a dog show it's jealous? Does he sort of roll his eyes and slam doors?
Whenever I was breastfeeding, mate, I swear he used to look at me and be like, you never did that with me.
Maybe he thought you were breastfeeding your dad. he just thought he'd got a bit smaller.
I think he got used to it and now she's up and about and she's climbing all over him and pulling him. He's very patient, actually. He's very, very patient. What annoys me is what other people who like will go, oh, what are you going to do with the dog then? Like, what do you mean? They're like, are you going to, you know, give him up or get rid of him or surely he's dangerous? I'm like, if I had a dangerous dog, like, what do you think? I'd just take the chance and just like leave him to like, you know, let's see what happens. You know, he is good, but you just have to be vigilant at literally all times. Like, you know, it's never a moment where you can just quickly pop out the room. She has to be up high. We've got like high chairs and like bassinet things, and yeah, so you just have to, it, like, as you probably know, I mean, we do know, you just make it work with your situation. And yeah, we've adapted, but it's definitely not been easy. It definitely adds another layer.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, because we've got a dog. We got a dog when the kids were like 4 and 6, and it's a lot easier transition to introduce a puppy to bigger kids than the other way around, yeah. I think.
How's the how's sleep going?
She's actually really quite good, actually. She's
next question.
I know it's terrible because I will admit that here, but like, especially when I was trying to make mum friends and they'd be like, oh, it's such a nightmare, isn't it? And I'm like, oh yeah, like, you know, you've just got to lie in that situation.
You 100% have to lie. Anyone that doesn't lie in that situation is a monster, I think, if they've got a good sleeper.
What are you going to gain out of it by telling your mate that, like, who's had 2 hours sleep, that you slept through the night? Like, I would just be like, oh yeah, I know, it's such a str- honestly, I just can't deal with it. And she's like, oh yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we're in it together. I'll send you, if I'm up in the night, like I'll send you a message at like 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever, and we can just, you know, we'll be there for each other. I usually leave my phone downstairs. So she's been really good. She had like that regression thing at like 4 months when her teeth started coming in. And there definitely are nights when there's like, she's up in that. Like last night, she was up at like 4 o'clock this morning. And I just got her in bed with me. I thought, I need my sleep. So I just got her in bed with me and she goes back to sleep. So she's not been too shab, I have to say. But, you know, there's definitely nights when I'm just like, I think it's worse actually when they're good and then you get this shock of like, sorry, what?
Yeah, the regression, yeah.
You're like, they wake up and you're like, oh, it must be 7 o'clock in the morning. You're like, it's 11:30 and I've just got into a deep sleep. Come in, you're like, what's your problem, mate? What's your problem? And then they're just like, gah! You know, most of the time when I come into her, she's not even crying. She just wants to be up. Well, she'll cry and then I come in and she's all like, you all right, babe? All right. All right, mate, I'm not all right.
And do you split it with Bruce in the night or how do you split the workload?
At first, it would be almost like we'd try and jump up and be like, oh, you know, I'll go. And now it's sort of like we pretend that we're asleep. And I think we do split it, but we're trying to get out of it a lot more now. The novelty's worn off.
10 months in.
Yeah, the novelty's worn off. Like, you go to her, mate, because I ain't getting up.
And are you thinking about more or are you tapping out a one or you've not spoken about it yet too soon?
Yeah, no. I think we'll definitely go for it. I think we'll have them close together. I think in terms of like for work and that, the way I see it is that this is disruptive. This is going to disrupt my work and it's much harder for me as a woman. Like I had a lovely male comedian asked me the other week, he's like, now how is it going back to the gigging? Because like we're thinking about, you know, having a baby and I'm wondering if it's going to affect me. And I'm like, it ain't going to affect you, mate. Like, you can go back to work. Like, I mean, I know that this is going to affect me for a little while, you know, I couldn't go on tour right now. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't just go and go, you know, if I suddenly had this huge following and it was just like bam, bam, bam every single night, we'd make it work, but it just wouldn't be ideal. So the way I see it is that we'll bang out the next one as soon as possible. And
romantic.
And then, yeah, and then instead of like, like...
At your dad's house.
I know, blasphemy. Sorry, Papa.
Big bad Bruce walks through the door with a moustache after a tough day of electrical engineering. Dad pops out to the pub. Just give him 10.
It just makes sense to just get it done in one chunk instead of like going back and then reestablishing and getting cracking again and then having to sort of take the time out again. Because I definitely want more. So
because your dad had a big gap, didn't he?
Yeah. And it's nice. But like, so me and my sister, we're 18 months apart and it's nice, you know, we're close and it's a nice gap. And I think that you can grow up together. And selfishly, like when you're out and about, you know, when you go to like, I don't know, Chesterton or whatever, they want to go on the same rides instead of having like a 5-year gap. And they're like, that's the baby ride. I don't want to go that kind of thing.
Well, that must have happened to you when you were, you know, you were 14 and there was a 1-year-old knocking about.
Oh, everyone thought he was mine.
Oh, did they? I thought he was a teenage bride.
It was so funny. And then because what it was is that by that time, my dad was, it was living in like sort of Kingston, sort of, you know, a nicer area. But I was still in Chatham and I was full-blown Chad, like, you know, with the proper tracksuits, the gold jewellery, the hair on. So I would come up to this sort of well-to-do sort of suburb of London and take my brother out in his pram in my tracksuit and that. And I used to just get the looks like, oh, look at her, 14, 15-year-old, like with this baby in a pram. I mean, to be fair, I definitely played on it and I loved every minute of it.
Did you used to pretend then?
Yeah. Used to love it.
Where would you go? What would you do?
Take him into downtown, wouldn't I? I'd just take him in town. Just take him out in his pram and that. And it would just, yeah. I definitely played on it. I think I like the attention, to be honest.
Yeah. It's amazing you speak to stand-up comedians, all the weird things they did for attention before they found just comedy.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that was the thing. Was I naughty at school and, you know, always speaking out and never, you know, behaving. It all makes sense now.
Was you naughty at school then?
I wasn't naughty, but I would always get sent out of class and, you know, like talking and disruptive and, you know... I was always trying to be a bit of a clown and stuff, and that would always get me in trouble.
Did you gig when you were pregnant? Like, how was that?
Yeah, I gigged right up until I did Up the Creek. Yeah, I did that when I was about two weeks away from my due date. So actually a month away from giving birth.
Wow.
Up the Creek sounds like a turn of phrase for someone pregnant. Oh, she's up the creek.
Yeah. No, I was, do you know what? I loved performing when I was pregnant. It worked so well. It was just such a freeing way to go up there because, I don't know, I mean, you'll know this. People judge you. Like.
Well, I won't. I've never done stand-up pregnant, Kelly.
Have you not, Rob?
No, I just put on a few pounds. I found out I was wheat intolerant, but it didn't look like it.
You were bloating.
I told everyone I was doing the remake of Junior.
When you go up on stage, people judge you. You know, once you're a big name and that, like, people know who you are, they know what to expect. But when you go up there, they judge you. And when you go up there with a big belly, like, you know, there's this warmth and this intrigue and there's, you know, and I would always, like, that one up the creek when I was absolutely just about to drop, I was so massive. And there was this really rowdy stag do on the front row. And I love playing around with those sort of guys anyway. But going up there pregnant, you know, they were talking through everyone's sets and they were just a nuisance. And I just went up there just straight away and just said, oh, babe, I haven't seen you in like, you know, 9 months. Boom. You know, he was like embarrassed.
Yeah.
It, you know, it created this thing. And they shut up and they loved it and they laughed. And it was like a tool that I could use, which was wonderful. You know, I had little jokes about, like, my trousers not fitting. And, you know, it was just, it was like jokes that I can only use whilst pregnant. I might have to just get pregnant and start using them again because they were funny.
That's the problem, isn't it? You get a great set, but then as soon as you have the baby, it's gone.
Yeah.
Because that happens to Dara O'Brien with it. He had a knee operation and he was gigging at his cane and he had loads of jokes about the cane. And then I saw him come off stage and he was walking normally. I went, oh, don't you need the cane anymore? He went, no, not really, but the jokes are going so well. But he was like, I know I've got to lose it. I can't be the cane guy forever, but I'm just enjoying it.
So you felt like audiences almost perceived you differently?
100%. And even actually coming back and talking about being a mum, it's such a warmer reaction from the crowd. It's crazy. Like, I just feel like they really accept me and warm to me so much quicker knowing that I'm a mum.
It's so difficult being pregnant. You psychologically, physically, everything is tough, isn't it? You know that you've got the pregnancy coming in, sorry, the labour coming, and or you're going to be a mum and all this stuff. So I think people are aware that there's a lot going on here. And if someone's pregnant, you give up your seat or you let them in. It's sort of, you're aware that they sort of need slightly better treatment than someone who's not pregnant. But also as well, being pregnant is quite funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you've just got a massive bump and inside it, it's a tiny baby.
I didn't find Rhodes found it hilarious.
No, that's the thing about pregnant women. They don't find it hilarious, but it is quite funny, isn't it? Having a little baby in your belly all the time. That's a funny concept, isn't it?
How often did you say that to Lou, Rob?
Never. I'm actually nervous about her hearing this. But if you turn the tables, if a bloke just had a little baby in his belly for 9 months, a lady would laugh, wouldn't they? Kelly, do you think it's
funny? Yeah, Junior was a good film.
No, I'll tell you what people, when they look at you and you're pregnant, the one thing that other women that have had babies, though, they are not respectful. They don't think about it. They come up to you and they want to tell you their horror stories about how they got... Oh, mate, never even met them before. Are you ready for the birth? You ready? Because that one, see that one over there, pointing their kid. They're like, oh, yeah, see that one. That was a bloodbath, mate.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, sorry. Like, oh, do I even
really?
Yeah. They can't wait to tell you their horror stories. I'd seen my sister give birth twice, actually.
Was you there?
I was her birthing partner for both of her children.
Wow.
I talk about this in my stand-up because it's like, you know, like, It's meant. I mean, you've seen it. Did you go down the business end?
No,
I was there.
I very much stayed up the. I don't know what the opposite of the business end is. The leisure end.
Yeah, like they were like, can you just go and like take your sister's feet, like so, like push up into her feet. So when she put for when she pushes, so like I went down to the end of the bed and I was like pushing up into her feet, and then like I like looked up and there it was, and It was like the Demogorgon. I mean, it was like the biggest thing I've ever seen. It's massive. It's like, yeah. I didn't even think that it could get that big. She's got a massive one. I don't know, but it grows to the size of like, I don't even know. Like, it's like, the only way I can describe it is that, you know, if you stare into a light for too long, every time you close your eyes, it's all you can see. Like, that's what. Now, when I close my eyes, I can see it's my sister's badge.
And then when you open them, you see your dad getting milk. It's terrible. You think you need therapy, Kelly?
I think I do. This has been like therapy for me, I think, like just getting it all off my chest.
Well, the other thing you can get off your chest, which may be helpful, is the one thing that annoys you about Bruce's parenting. Is there something that he's doing that's annoying you, Kelly, that if he listened to this, he could potentially change his ways?
Oh, do you know what? I love that man, but my God. He's like the safety bear. Safety first. This is a man that made me, at the age of 34, wait for the fucking green man. I love that man. He's an absolute hunk. He's literally like, wait for the green man. I'm like, what? Like, there's no cars coming. He's that safety bet. So with B, it is like safety. And because I'm with her all day in that, I'm a little bit more relaxed, like a little bit more like, you know, whatever, like she's fine, she'll be all right. But it's with the feeding. So he'd be like, is that cut up enough? Is that soft enough? I'm like, babe, it's mashed potato. Like, he's like, it's fine. It's a very cute thing, but it's like on all the time. It's like safety. Is she that buckled in? So I think that's one thing about him that is annoying. That he's controlling.
It's a big word to end on, that, isn't it? Yeah. But I think we're going to stick with it.
I know he's safety bear.
You wait to him. He'll be letting her play with matches the next time you come home. Going, yeah, happy now. Taking a few more risks, are we, Kelly? Oh, well, you're smashing it, Kelly. Good luck with it. Good luck with the rest of the tour with Alan. Send him our love, and we'll speak to you soon.
As soon as he has a kid, we'll have him on.
Yeah, thank you, boys.
Cheers. Thanks, Kelly. Bye. Kelly Convey.
There we go. She seems in a very good place for 10 months.
Yeah, she was, though, sat on the floor of her kid's bedroom next to a radiator, hunched over a laptop with a microphone propped on a pillow.
Yeah.
The vision didn't match the energy.
No, exactly. But I was hoping the dog was going to pounce on her at some point.
I've met that dog, and he's a fucking unit.
See you on Tuesday, guys. Bye.
See you on Tuesday.